maybe you've heard by now about this controversy about Britt Hume's remark. It was on Fox News Sunday a few weeks ago, and the panelists were asked to make predictions about the coming year. So Britt Hume weighed in about the Tiger Woods situation. And here's what he said exactly. Tiger Woods will recover as a golfer. Whether he can recover as a person, I think, is a very open question. He's said to be a Buddhist. I don't think that faith offers the kind of forgiveness and redemption that's offered by the Christian faith. So my message to Tiger would be, Tiger, turn to the Christian faith and you can make a total recovery. Now, judging from the reactions of many people, especially on the left, you think that he had recommended Tiger become a Nazi. Listen to some of these now. The blogger Andrew Sullivan criticized Hume for his pure sectarianism. Washington Post media writer Tom Shales called him a sanctimonious busybody who had, quote, dissed half a billion Buddhists. MSNBC's David Schuster just hung his head and called Hume's intervention truly embarrassing. My favorite, though, was MSNBC's Keith Olbermann. He compared Britt Hume's advocacy of Christianity to jihadism. Now, the roots of this visceral reaction to what Britt Hume said are very old. They go back to at least the mid-17th century and the wars of religion. So after the Reformation, Europe was convulsed by these terrible conflicts between Catholics and Protestants, and the continent was really ravaged by these wars. So a lot of the leading intellectuals in the wake of that period, think of Descartes, Leibniz, Hume, Kant, Hegel, many others, they all tried to solve this problem of the violence of religion. They had two classical approaches. One was to hyper-emphasize the rational and ethical elements of religion and to excise the more supernatural or sort of strange parts of religion. Think of Thomas Jefferson making his famous Bible, where he literally cut out offending passages and kept the ethical teaching of Jesus. But the other great approach of the modern theorists was to set up a kind of peace treaty with religion. We will tolerate you if you remain basically private. So as long as religion stays private, does not move into the public conversation, is sort of whispered among fellow adepts, then it's okay, we'll tolerate you. But see, by implication, if you come out publicly, then we will go after you, we will chastise you. Now, to be fair to the theorists of modernity, religion has, at best, a spotty record when it comes to adjudicating its disputes nonviolently. And of course, as I've said many times, September 11th just stirred up this old Enlightenment idea, because here you have religious people acting in a supremely irrational and supremely violent way. So a lot of people said, see, there it is. If religion comes out publicly, it comes out in this violent form. Well, here's the thing. Christians cannot accept this modern peace treaty. We can't accept the arrangement that says religion is okay as long as it's utterly privatized. The reason is we declare the lordship of Jesus Christ. That does not mean simply Lord of my personal life, Lord of my private life, Lord of my conscience. That means Lord of everything. That means Lord of politics and economics and culture, public life, as well as private life. The lordship of Jesus is irreconcilable with the privatization of religion. And that's why from the beginning, Christianity's had a very public and very missionary profile. Jesus himself said, go out and declare to all the nations. From the beginning, Paul goes out to the ends of the world, as he knew it, to declare the lordship of Jesus Christ. So we can't accept the modern peace treaty. The question is not whether we come out publicly, it's how we come out publicly. And here's where we're up against the extremism of, let's say, a Keith Olbermann. Keith Olbermann cannot imagine an alternative to an utterly privatized religion or jihadism. Those are the two options. Either you are completely private, or you are a violent jihadist aggressor. What they're overlooking, it seems to me, and it's a very important point, is the possibility of making a truly public argument for religion. That seems to be excluded from the conversation, that we can actually make a public argument. See, as long as religion is a private matter, well, that's like a hobby. We don't really argue about hobbies. You know, you got your hobbies, I've got mine, and that's fine. It's just a matter of subjective taste. Or I wouldn't think of mounting an argument to prove that meat is better than fish. I mean, I prefer meat to fish, but it's just a matter of taste. when you utterly privatize religion, you reduce it to that level, and therefore you will not make a public argument about it. But see, from the beginning, Christians, like Paul, and then going all the way up through Augustine and Thomas Aquinas and John Henry Newman, everybody else, they have indeed made public arguments about the faith, meaning marshaling of evidence, offering of arguments, looking at pros and cons, looking at alternate points of view in a nonviolent, non-coercive, rational, and public way, presenting what we think is the truth of Christianity. That remains altogether possible, even though it's often excluded from the scene today. And see, I think that's exactly what Brit Hume was doing. Brit Hume was not saying, let's pass a law to require all people to be Christians. He didn't say, Tiger Woods ought to pay a price. He ought to be punished if he doesn't accept Jesus Christ. He didn't say, let's use the public arm of the state to coerce people to be Christians. He laid out, in a public venue, what he thought was the convincing quality of Christianity. In other words, he made a public argument. May his tribe increase.